onion. Toes is eaten. Got you eating with nuts in your
mouth.
That's
my favorite.
Yeah, is it? Swallow. Swallow, dude.
What?
Hey, special thanks to a nice listener, Scott from Oaktown.
Yeah.
He got me this cool old-fashioned Cubs. They were the Federal League team.
Scott,
and they were the Whales at the time, the Chicago Whales. That was their original team.
He's the best, man.
And I grew up a Cub fan, and he got me this really cool T-shirt. I can't wait to wear it today. Thank you very much for doing that, Scott.
No worries. You know, Scotty's a great guy. Scotty's been out there, and he's like, hey, give this to Cozy. So
that's so sweet.
I wanted to make sure that you got that. Scotty, you're the man. I was waiting for Coz to get it, for he can thank you personally.
Exactly. And that's very nice of him to do. So we welcome you in. Joe Lowendibs here. Hour number four of the extravaganza.
Someone looks a little hurt.
No.
Scott, someone might be a little touched because you didn't get them a
shirt. No.
You want this shirt? Do you want this shirt?
No, thank you. You're misconstruing.
I didn't even say you. So what are you talking about?
You're looking directly at me.
Did
and
I say your
I
name?
Was simply going to add maybe a third category if we haven't put the poll up yet on who's the smoochiest. Is it Papa and Steph? Is it Lola LeBron? Or is it Jim Cosmore and Raider Scott? That's all I was going to say. Nobody's hurt. Nobody wants a T-shirt. I could give a rat's behind about the Chicago whatever that is.
Whales.
Some defunct,
of the
tired.
Federal League.
Probably another team that couldn't win the big one.
It sounds like you're hurt. Sounds like it.
What was that,
yes!
Top row?
Sounds like you hurt.
We need an instant. Give me a sounder. We need an instant poll update. Do we have a poll up at? Where's the poll up at?
So if you go to at Joe Low and Dibs on Twitter, you'll see the poll. Who's more smoochy, Papa on Steph or Low on LeBron? Low is winning, I guess we'll say. 67% for Low.
Wow, Low. 67% of the voters think that you're smoochier on LeBron.
I don't know. It's interesting because some of the things that the texters put on there about my love for this guy, it's crazy. It's asinine. And then I get Dibs hitting the buttons and pushing stuff.
I'm not hitting any of those buttons. I would never hit something so childish and sophomoric as a doing to represent your undying love for another man.
Undying.
I'm proud of that.
Does Papa's smoochiness for Steph fall back a little bit once he finds out that Steph doesn't believe we made it to the moon?
Depends.
Who's loonier, Steph or Kyrie?
Kavon is loonier.
Nice, Dibs.
Oh, now you're going to laugh over the top rope?
We need to get our shirt. Scott, send Anna a shirt, top rope. And put a picture jumping off a friggin' rope.
It's perfect.
Isn't it?
We need a logo for her and everything.
Yes. Big wrestling ring with Joe Low and Dibs on the floor
and
of the mat.
And Coz.
Oh, my God. That would be awesome.
Kolsky and Shasky. All of us on the bottom. And there's Anna. You can see her in midair off the top rope.
You could actually be dressed as a referee. And the rest of us could be down there, and you could be a ref, like, ready to make the call on it.
I could be a ref, but as long as I'm underneath top rope as she comes in to pile on.
Hey, don't be fooled. I may be little, but I could do some damage.
It's what I hear. That's the word on the street.
Cozy, she came down. She threw one in on you.
Right down my road.
And Cozy's like, oh, okay.
Anna, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Like 2.5 hours in, I haven't heard a thing.
Right.
I'm like, oh, wait a
minute. I love when she gets Dibs, and Dibs just looks and gives it a look like, oh, really? And she just
is there, looks gone. Like he hates certain days. Like,
still waiting on that Castro Valley watering hole, but
crayons.
Wait.
It's a little late.
There's crayons. I got
said
a bunch
that one
of them.
Too. By the way, did
Hold
you
on.
All not hear
you
that?
Didn't.
I did say crayons.
There's
yes,
a bunch
I
of
did.
Them.
Anna, no,
go
you didn't.
Back.
She
go
did.
Back to
You're
the
right.
tape.
Check the tape. She did not.
Check the tape.
Dibs, you're right. Dibs gave you a
Thankfully,
chance.
Thankfully, Anthony Slater's on hold, and we can't subject him to any more of this nonsense. Than
top rope.
And hit me up, by the way. Hit me up, by the way, at Coz NBCS. We've got a bunch of, hold on. Rita's Italian Ice is the place to go in Castro Valley, in the CV, as we like to call it.
Oh, Anna said that one, too.
Doucette's.
Oh, she said that one, too.
I did not say that one.
You did not say that
I
one?
I did not.
And there's also, there's a couple of other. Gosh.
There's another one, Doolittle, somebody said. I heard about that one, but never been there.
But
Crayons is the one I've been to.
Crayons is the one I saw here, and there is one more called the Double? Is it called the Double? There's one. There's
heard
one
of the Double
place.
Tree.
Maybe it's just a double tree.
It's one I really don't remember. Sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, so we're giving you all of the Castro Valley love at 95.7 The Game. Is that okay?
Anthony Slater does a great job with The Athletic. He is our Warriors contributor, and he joins us now. Make sure you get to theathletic.com and read his 5 observations, which I start every post-game, Anthony, with your 5 observations. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing today, Anthony?
Doing good, you know, back in California, finally after that long road trip. I think 8 of the next 9.
It should be pretty good, just a trip to Utah and Sacramento. Other than that, the Warriors should be home. Do you look at the schedule and do you see a chance for them to rip off a long series of wins now that everybody's back healthy?
Yeah, I mean, and even if it's not a long win streak, maybe it's something like they win 11 or 12 or something like that and play good basketball. Just because they're getting healthy, I think they're motivated in the regular season, unlike they've been maybe in the last couple of years because of what just happened, that 6-8 string. You have Draymond Green clearly motivated to earn maybe a little bit of clout back in the locker room. I thought he was really engaged last night. Curry's kind of on his MVP tear. Durant's remained efficient. And then I think it's also a good time for them to do this because I think with DeMarcus Cousins clearly nearing, getting closer to his return, I think they want to give him a soft landing spot. I don't think they want him to walk into a team that's kind of struggling, trying to find itself, maybe not healthy. I think they want to all be clicking on all cylinders, when they bring him in because it's going to be a big adjustment once they do that.
This morning we had interesting debate about just the dynamics of the team. I had an analogy as, you know, Steph may be the engine that drives this team, but Draymond is like the glue. You know, he comes in, he's going to do the dirty work. He's not going to be flashy. The rebounding, the second shot opportunity creates for guys. Who kind of describe your, this, the makeup, the chemistry of this team that makes them so unique?
Yeah. You know, I saw last night with Draymond, it was like the way he pushed the pace. I mean, you could see it right away. You know, he's getting defensive rebounds in that first quarter, and suddenly he's zooming down the court. He's like telling guys, you know, audibly, hey, come on, let's go, let's go. And they've been kind of slow in the past. It's kind of weird to think. But, you know, the middle of the pack in three-point attempts and the middle of the pack in pace in the NBA, I think Draymond helps that because even if he's not shooting and making a lot of threes, he's getting them in transition. Like, seeing Clay gets a lot of looks. You know, the offense is kind of whipping around. A lot of the off-ball stuff is suddenly working because the defense is backpedaling. And that's why they, you know, they got up a ton of threes last night. As far as the dynamics of the team, it's just interesting how each piece kind of fits in its own way. Durant's kind of the one that, I don't want to say awkward fit, he's so good, he can kind of do anything he wants, but it's just interesting the role the backseat Durant at times has to play now. I mean, we saw when Steph and Draymond were out, I think his last 7 games he was shooting 25 shots a game. His last 2 games before Steph came back, he shot 31 and 33 shots. Now, since Steph's been back, he hasn't shot 20 shots in any of the last 5 games. So he's the one to me, especially because he's the one that came the last to the team. He's the one that kind of has to, you know, fit around the team where all the other guys have their roles that are already kind of set.
Anthony Slater covers the Warriors for The Athletic, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Wednesday, Toronto in town, the last time they played, back up in Toronto. That was a heck of a ball game. Warriors now more 100% with their roster. You don't know about Andre Iguodala. Warriors look at that game, circle it, and say, hey, this is a nice barometer for us. So, you know, every once in a while, they've got to, you know, they got to open the throttle and see what they do against some of the better teams. How much bigger is a Wednesday game at home against Toronto than your typical, you know, Wednesday night in December?
I think it's a little like the Milwaukee game where they just don't like going 0-2 against teams, especially teams that could potentially see down the road in the finals. They don't like giving an Eastern Conference potential finals opponent that type of confidence. So I think they're motivated in that sense. I think measuring stick-wise, Toronto probably looked at it more than the Warriors do. Because, you know, if the Warriors did lose Wednesday, they're not going to suddenly be wary of if they can compete with Toronto on the big stage. But it's Toronto that if they can come into Oracle, they can beat a full tilt Warriors fan, they are going to have some confidence in that potential matchup down the road. And the Warriors don't want to give them that. So I think that's where the motivation comes. Also, I mean, we mentioned it earlier, I think they want to rattle off a big run in December. I think they want to have a huge month, and beating a Toronto team at home pretty sound would be a big kind of measuring stick there.
I'm under the impression, or I kind of feel as if Toronto had the pressure on them at home. Steph Curry, Draymond Green wasn't able to play in that game, so seems like the Warriors were playing with house money. Now that they're coming here, and the Warriors have all their guns. Do you feel that there's a little bit more pressure on the Warriors, or it's just a game, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a game. Steve Kerr said it the other day in Milwaukee, because the local Milwaukee media was really trying to hype that game up, because it was big for them, you know, national stage. ESPN's rarely in town. Milwaukee had been playing so well, and they'd come to shoot around and were talking to Steve Kerr about how big a game it was. He was like, you know what? If we lose, it doesn't matter at all. Are we going to be talking about this Milwaukee December game 3 months from now? Is anyone going to care in April? No, we're not. And he's right about that. You know, tomorrow's game in the grand scheme really doesn't mean anything. But, you know, as far as, you know, a team, again, that's kind of trying to get some footing on getting on a big December run, it would be a help. But, again, this team is so far past actually caring that much about one regular season result.
So, really, the upcoming games that have some import, the Christmas game against the Lakers certainly would be one of them, and also the game where DeMarcus Cousins returns. Do you think that that will be after the new year? Perhaps a landing spot would be against Sacramento on January 5th?
Yeah, it's just going to kind of depend on how he progresses. They're just very much right now wanting an actual target date only to do it because he has to advance, you know, past a lot of little minor stages as he goes along in this rehab. I think they're going to know more. It's even possible they're not rolling out, you know, letting him play in a game or two in Santa Cruz. And I believe Santa Cruz got some home games this weekend. I mean, that's, I guess, a possibility. I'm not sure if he's going to be, you know, willing to do that, but you mentioned the Sacramento one. I mean, that's a motivation factor for him just because it's his final place to play. But maybe a return is better. You know how with a lot of these guys, with Steph, they didn't let him return in Toronto because they thought he might push it a little bit too much because it was such a high-profile game. Maybe they'll find a soft landing spot for DeMarcus where there isn't that type of outside motivation of going back to Sacramento.
Anthony Slater from The Athletic joining us, 95.7 The Game. Warriors and Raptors tomorrow. We'll have it for you here on 95.7 The Game. You get a chance, Anthony, to see the best team on the planet 82-plus times a year. You see the greatest of the greats. But on days when you don't have to watch them play, what teams interest you? Who do you like to watch now? Who's fun? Who do you watch and why do you watch them? I'm always intrigued at someone. You've got to watch the Warriors. They're fantastic. So what the heck can you watch that entertains you now?
Yeah, you know, the Eastern Conference and how they're kind of coming together. We're talking about a lot of these teams as if they're legit threats. So I like to see how Toronto's coming together, especially with Kawhi. You know, I love watching Giannis. I can watch any game he's in with some of the stuff he does. So the way Milwaukee's kind of advancing with Budenholzer, that's been interesting. You know, I've been curious about these Rockets and Jazz games because that was supposed to be the number two and three teams in the West for sure, and the biggest threats to the Warriors. And, you know, they're both out of the playoffs right now. So anytime Houston's on, I'm at least checking in and watching some of the games because I still kind of in the back of my mind think they will eventually be the best Western Conference threat. But just to see the state they're in, it's kind of wild. So I like to follow that on a daily basis. And then the one other big one that I watch a lot of the Thunder. You know, I covered them for 3 years, and I'm very curious about their past post-Durant and the way they kind of brought themselves back together and then to the point they are right now, which I think some people would say they're the second-best team in the West, or they have been over the last month or so. I don't know what they are, maybe 14-4 in their last 18 games or something like that. The way Paul George is playing, he's playing probably as good as he has, at least as a member of the Thunder. And I love watching Steven Adams. I think he's maybe one of the most underrated players in the league. So I like following mostly the main teams, the good teams, and also the young teams. You know, even up the road, a Sacramento team who the Warriors are going to see on Friday. Like, they're fun to watch because it's fun to watch a team try to build.
Isn't it interesting, Anthony, that I'm looking at the schedule and I see, well, not the schedule, but just the standings. Oklahoma right now with, 17-8, Golden State 2 and Denver 3, Lakers 5. Isn't it interesting that everyone says this is a team that maybe won't make the playoffs, and all of a sudden you bring one guy in, and here they are. Is this Laker team have a chance to, to really be a team, a force to be reckoned with, not necessarily with the Warriors, but a force to be reckoned with in the association, especially in the West?
Yeah, I mean, if you told me right now that the West line was these Warriors, Lakers, I would be shocked.
Wow.
That might say a little bit more about where the West is at, right? I mean, is anyone believing Houston right now? Like, I guess I kind of just said I somewhat do, but just where Utah is, there's no guaranteed for sure second team in the West. I mean, we could say, oh, it can't be the Lakers that'll be in the West Finals, but then who would it be as the second best team in the West? So LeBron does that for an entire franchise. He lifts everyone else up, but I also think they're entering a good stage for their young guys. You know, their young guys have had a nice, solid finish the last season. I know they didn't make the playoffs, but they were pretty good in the last few months. And, Ingram took a step. He hasn't been fantastic this year, but Josh Hart, underrated. Kyle Kuzma produces. Lonzo Ball, he's getting better. I know he hasn't reached the place that I think a lot of people thought when they drafted him two overall. But you know, I like a lot of the pieces in L.A. And when you have LeBron in the mix, everyone else gets better because of everything else he does. And in a West that is, you know, overall, I think the top level of the West is more disappointing than we thought. Why can't it be the Lakers?
Strong.
All righty. Anthony, thanks for the insights. We appreciate it, buddy. Have a good night. What are you laughing at over there, weirdy? Thanks, guys. Man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks, yeah. Anthony. It's just interesting, strong. Guys. You know, no, it is strong because
strong.
The dynamics was Daniel Dibley on this show, Coz, when you weren't here, he said this team probably wouldn't even make the playoffs, the Lakers, that is, and went to, say, 8 seed, 9 seed. And it's crazy that one guy comes on the scene. They can say whatever they want to say. Again? And now,
oh wait, that wasn't on Talkback.
No, but he, you know what he did? You know what he just said? Anthony just said that it wouldn't surprise him if the Warriors and the Lakers are the two teams in the West that meet. Would that not be incredible for one season, a guy to take a team to the Western Conference?
It would be insane because, quite frankly, I don't think they're that good. I don't think the Lakers are that good. And if they get there,
it's one guy. You got to point at.
There's no question.
Okay.
About it.
And that's why. And here's the thing that people don't know. I think that this Laker team is better than his Cavs team last year.
Please.
So it's just interesting that the Warriors are dominant. Everyone's saying the Warriors are the dominant team. We get that. But it's just interesting if the Lakers can make it to the Western Finals. I think it would solidify this guy is arguably the greatest.
There's no question about it.
Thank you for being real.
Well, update on the Smoochorama poll, on the Smoochie poll?
The update, I'll get that for you in just a moment.
Yeah, because there's got to be, after that little diatribe, there's got to be, it's an overwhelming run. Yeah, I could see easily that.
I just was making a
you don't have to recap. It was pretty transparent what you were doing. You were cramming your guy into the conversation yet again, for no real reason. Even after we were all were in agreement that we were going to break off the interview, you had to go one more. And you had to cram L.A. into the program. That's so you don't have to recap what we all had to suffer through.
LeBron James, yeah, I said his name.
Yeah, 67% still with more votes. That's a lot more votes.
Wow, that's a dominant win for you.
Up in 23 hours, we actually get the poll to be resolved. So we'll find out tomorrow who wins the Smoochie poll.
9:30, Jamal Wilkes is going to join us. We'll find out what he
was at the game the other night. Is that right? He was at the game the other night? Jamal was at the game?
Yeah. We'll find out what he was doing at the game, hanging out, having some fun. Talk a little Berkeley times, right? Dan's just looking at me.
I mean, sure. It's great. It's great.
Hey, next week, did you know this? Next week between 8 and 8:15 a.m., we're going to be giving away a bunch of signed Jerry Rice
items. Give it away now.
Something every day. Just another great giveaway from your boys, Jolo and Dave.
Wow.
And what did we do, Dan?
We did, indeed.
Dan, what did we do, Dan?
We qualified another person for a trip for four to Hawaii. It was outstanding.
Alaska.
It was tremendous.
Alaska Airlines doing a great thing. We're working with Alaska Airlines, and it is fantastic. Somebody and three friends going to Hawaii for Christmas.
And I believe we now have four qualifiers, and we have a maximum of three more who could possibly qualify, so all you have to do is go to 95.7 The Game and register. If you hear your name, you call back within 9 minutes and 57 seconds, and you could be qualified for a trip for four thanks to our good friends at Alaska Airlines. And that's the only airline you choose, right, when you go to
when
Hawaii?
When I go to Hawaii, I do. My family and I choose that airline to go to Hawaii. We go to Oahu at least once a year. My wife was raised on that island. Stephen Barbosa of Castro Valley, the CV.
Yes.
Oh, Stephen.
So, just Leandro's cousin?
Could be.
He's got championships. So.
Exactly. So that's not bad pedigree right
there.
No,
it's great. And Steven is one of four in the hopper right now as we qualify three
one
more people
there
throughout
we go.
The...
All right, when we continue, we're going to break down some more NBA and some Warriors.
Warriors, baby!
And talk some old stuff as well because Jamal Wilkes was a great, great Warrior and he was a great, great Laker and we got some good old-time basketball conversation we're going to get to.
Let's get it. What do you think he's going to... If he was going to talk about the Warriors team... What would he consider Draymond? I thought that was a tease.
You know what? I will. That's a great one. I will let you ask that when Jamal Wilkes joins us on Joe Lowe.
He's going to let you. Look at that.
I know. It's kind of guy.
Whoa. Power hungry.
LeBron James, yeah, I said his name.
It's the season of giving. And what's better than winning VIP tickets to see the Warriors take on LeBron James and the Lakers on Christmas Day? It's the holiday gift grab on 95.7 The Game. all this week. Tune in at 8:20 a.m. and 4:20 p.m. for the Holiday Sounder. Ho, ho, ho. Then call in for your chance to win tickets, gift cards, and more from our holiday gift bag. Plus, all winners qualify for VIP tickets to see the Dubs and Lakers on Christmas. Happy holidays from 95.7 The Game. Joe Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Let's get right to it. Anytime you get an opportunity to talk to a Hall of Famer, a four-time NBA champion, three-time NBA All-Star, former Warrior, who's a former Laker. This guy was, I just used to love watching. This is when I started to watch the NBA, when Keith Wilkes, Jamal Wilkes, Silk just started to let it roll. And I'd try to imitate his shot. So let's bring him on. Jamal Wilkes joining us, 95.7 The Game here on Joe Low and Dibs. I'm Jim Cosmore in for Joe. Jamal, can I start with that? How did you get that release? Where did you learn that style? Because as a kid, I was trying to imitate your jump shot and trying to get it as smooth as yours. Where did you get that from?
That's funny. Well, first of all, I'd like to thanks for having me on your show and say hello to all your listeners. Mm-hmm. And I'm honored that you tried to imitate it, Jim. But actually, as a young boy growing up in Ventura, basketball, high school basketball was huge, and I, like all the kids, were playing. And I was a tall, skinny kid, one of the taller kids, and one of the better kids, faster. So I started playing with older guys and men when I was 11, 12, and didn't like a youngster being out on the floor with them. So they tried to run me off, and they blocked my shot all the time and pushed me around. And so most kids start off on a sidewinder on an 8-foot hoop and then graduate to a 9-foot hoop and then figure out their shot on a 10-foot hoop. Well, I had just graduated to the 9-foot hoop and they wanted to play on 10-foot hoops. And, you know, my pride, I had to hang with them. So I didn't know I was doing anything different. It happened very naturally, very organically. And I didn't realize I was doing anything different until I got to college and met Coach Wooden.
And did Coach Wooden feel the temptation at the time to try to change your shot? Or was it one of those things where he saw how effective you were with your unique shot and he just let it roll?
Well, both. Actually, he called me over the first week of practice as a sophomore. Freshman couldn't play then. And, you know, I was petrified. And everybody was looking and whispering, wondering what was going on. And so he says, Keith, I want you to come here. And I want you to shoot baskets around the key. And I'm going to rebound for you. And I was just flabbergasted. You know, Coach is going to rebound for me. I figured he called the team manager or another player or an assistant coach. Anyway, I must have made like 95%. I shot about 30, 40 shots. And I remember every pass he made me was just perfect. I remember thinking, gee, I could play with this guy. And so he calls me over after I'd made about 90% and said, now, how did you shoot that? And I went through the whole motion, and he's very intent. He's studying me very intent. And it was very intimidating for a young 18-year-old kid. So I showed him the motion, and he said, well, does it leave your fingertips? And I thought it through, and I said, well, yeah, Coach. And he said, well, does it have the good reverse spin? And he rolled the ball out, and he comes back to him. And I said, well, yeah, Coach. And he says, okay, you're dismissed.
That's awesome. So, that's a great story.
That's great.
And so years later, you know, when you're a player playing for a coach in college or high school, particularly, you know, there's a bit of an intimidation factor there.
Sure.
You know, wanting to please and so forth and so on. And so years later, we laughed about it, joked about it. He said, yeah, he thought about changing it, but he could see I was very comfortable with it. And more importantly, he liked the results. And so he left me alone. And, you know, to this day, I'm so grateful and thankful because, you know, some coaches just would have changed it just to change it. And, you know, we went through the whole motion, the whole routine, the whole exercise. We thought it through together. And, you know, he left it alone. So I'm very, very pleased.
Oh, thank you for sharing. When you watch this Warriors team, and let's just talk about a guy, Draymond Green. What does he bring to the table, and what makes his style of basketball so unique?
He brings tremendous passion. He brings tremendous pride. He's a very intelligent player. I don't know him personally. I would presume he's a very intelligent man. And but his passion is just unbridled. And to have that is a real asset for any team.
Man, it's fun to watch. I'm watching some of your old video right now, Jamal, and some of the stuff that you did in your career and some of the great players you played with. And you go back, you got the Norm Nixons and the Magics. When you guys were rolling, what the heck was that like when you had Kareem out there and you had Magic? You had Bob McAdoo on the team at one time. There were so many weapons on the floor.
Bobby McAdoo.
Yeah, remember that. You had so many weapons on the floor at the same time, for crying out loud. How did you guys share it so well?
Yeah. You know, it was unbelievable, quite frankly. We not only had those great players, but even our management and ultimately our owner are all Hall of Famers. And the expectations were very high. You know, when you have a lot of great players, great things are expected. And, you know, we tried our best to meet them. But more importantly, I think we were all character guys, much like this current Warrior team. You know, we weren't going to let any personal issues, and there were many. It was ongoing. It was constant. It was always something. But we just weren't going to let it get in the way because we understood it was all to all of our best interest to come together and win, to put personal stuff aside. Now, I will say this, that back then, you know, we were older. Many of us had at least, you know, if not graduated, gone 2 or 3 years to college, where these guys in today's game are much younger. But being part of that Showtime was just an incredible experience. And, you know, to have the who's who come out and watch you play, I mean, wow, that's such a turnoff.
Jamal Wilkes here on 95.7 The Game. How much did it help you in your time with the Lakers that as a rookie you were a part of a championship team right here with the Golden State Warriors? What was that experience like coming onto a team that had Rick Barry and other big personalities and being able to forge that and going on to win the championship?
That was a very special time for me. It was the only team I played on, championship team, that was not expected to win and do well. You know, we were picked, I think, fifth in our division that year. And, you know, they made the trade of the, you know, the great Nate Thurman for Clifford Ray. I mean, wholesale changes. I think Clyde Lee retired that year. And it was just a tremendous experience. And then, of course, you know, there were two questions I was asked coming into the NBA. Number one is, how are you, you know, at 190 on a good day, going to survive the rigors of the NBA? And then two, how are you going to get along with a guy like Rick Barry being a Wooden protege? Now, I didn't understand the second question much because I hadn't met Rick yet. But I learned so much from Rick. And, you know, I think Clifford and Butch Beard and Jeff Mullins, our veteran leadership. And I really admired Al because he allowed our veterans to contribute to the process. He was very open that way, and I think it was very helpful for myself and Phil Smith and those younger guys to have the veterans that we did, and they took an interest in us and, you know, helped us develop our games. And, you know, that experience with Golden State, I mean, not only did I cut my teeth and prove I could play in the NBA, but I learned a lot to adapt my game to the NBA, and, you know, Rick and Butch and Cliff were just invaluable.
How do you say it without being necessarily being biased? Right now in the NFL, people say, oh, it's the best it's ever seen in scoring. And I'm, you know, since I played in them, I don't believe that. There's different eras, and I say they couldn't have played when we played because receivers now run down the field and we can't hit them. They couldn't come across the middle. Ronnie Lott would kiss them. And now you can't do all those different things. How do you justify who was one of the greatest teams? And how do you look at this Warrior team? Because with the talent, people are saying this may be the greatest team of all time in their era. Is that not a true statement?
Oh, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, they've established that as far as their era is concerned. And as far as comparing teams across eras, yeah, I think it's impossible. I think it's great for fans to debate it and talk about it on sports radio and sports TV and so forth and so on. But I just think it's very difficult. All any team can do is be the best that season. And then if they're the best multiple seasons, which the Warriors are, then, you know, I think you're – you're making a strong statement to being considered the best of your era.
Jamal Wilkes joining us, 95.7 The Game. You know him from his great time with the Warriors and with the Lakers. It's always great talking NBA. Hey, what was the, nowadays we see guys, Jamal, and they're, you know, first-class travel, five-star hotels. You know, they can't play four games in five nights anymore. What was the travel like when you guys were playing? How many games and how many nights were you guys playing? What was the, you know, you guys kind of were the building blocks for what the NBA is now. What was it like when you first got into the NBA?
Well, the travel was challenging at best. I mean, particularly going through, you know, the snow country in winter where flights get, you know, canceled or postponed. And then, you know, there's the ripple effect of all that. So, you know, it's certainly gotten much easier, I think, having, you know, everyone's got their chartered planes and can control the travel schedule more. And I think also what you said earlier about Ronnie Lott being able to do this and what you can't do it anymore. You know, we used to be able to be more liberal with our hand checking. And then there was no flagrant foul. And, you know, it was a good thing back in those days to, you know, for a big guy to take a little guy out who was coming to the basket.
Touch him up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't even bump the cutter anymore, Jamal. I mean, now with the freedom of movement rules and the really freedom of scoring and shooting, do you sometimes look at the modern game with a little bit of envy and think about what great things you could do with this current crop of rules?
No, I don't. I'm grateful for what I had. I feel I was part of a golden era of the sport. You know, perhaps the money wasn't as big, but, you know, money's not everything. And so, you know, I don't envy them. And I think the rule changes benefit the offense more because they feel it's more entertaining. And I think I would have benefited. Many of us in my era would have benefited with the rule change they have now that is, I think, favored toward the offense.
All righty. Jamal, it's great catching up with you. We appreciate it. We'll do it again as the season wears on. Always love talking to guys who really were the building blocks for what the NBA is today. Jamal Wilkes joining us on 95.7 The Game. Thanks, Jamal. Have a great day.
Hey, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure, really. It's an honor to have him on. You're talking about a basketball Hall of Famer. So I asked him about the travel and the games and days and
yeah,
all that stuff.
And it got me thinking because, you know, last year there was no more 4 and 5 nights for this crop of NBA guys, even though they have charter planes and every seat reclines into a first-class seat. And so I was thinking, what was it like when Jamal Wilkes was a rookie? 1974-75, he was on the Warriors, a team, by the way, Lowe, that went 48-34. So they weren't a team that was going to be expected to go all the way, but they ended up winning the title. Listen to this road trip. You go on the road. It's a four-game trip. You open up on a Thursday at Cleveland. It's a loss. The next night, you play at Chicago, also a loss, a team that they would eventually beat in the NBA Finals. The very next night, you go to Philadelphia. So three games in three nights. All on the road. So you go Cleveland, Chicago, Philadelphia, not on charters,
by
the way. And then you do get a couple nights off, and then you play New York in New York. You come all the way back. You play Atlanta and road trips, etc. But three nights, all three on the road. And that was just standard fare back in the 70s.
And guys are wearing those canvas Chuck Taylor Converse to play their games in.
Hardwood floors.
And you didn't have the spring underneath, no sponge. And on top of that, as he points out, there's no first-class travel. You're getting up at 6:30 or trying to get to the airport by 6:30 to catch your flight because getting from Chicago to Philadelphia might include some weather along the way.
And how about this 7-game trip that they took? It's just a 7-game roadie.
7-gamer.
You open up at Houston. The next night, of course, you're at New Orleans. And the very next night, you're at Atlanta.
Wow.
So 3 and 3 nights.
Wow.
That Southern Tour, hitting that Southern Tour.
Yeah. But then you get a little break. You get a couple nights off. Then you go to Washington, couple nights off at New York, couple nights off at Philadelphia, and then you play a back-to-back against the Kansas City Omaha Kings. All told, 7 games in 12 nights in 7 cities. And like you say, with commercial air travel, and who knows if you had a flight delay on your trip from Atlanta to Washington, and maybe you miss a connector along the way.
Yep.
Guys, just a nightmare.
Think about if you tried to get guys to do that. You know how many guys would be like, I'm not playing tonight? I mean, you think how the game has changed, and it continues to evolve, and for the good reasons, you know, back-to-back. You want to see back-to-back-to-back? I mean, 3 nights in a row? Tell me how tough that is. But now you do that, guys would be, it'd be a mutiny. They would never do it.
But we saw a mutiny in Chicago over practices. Coach is asking guys to practice and run wind sprints, and they're calling the Players Association saying, you know, they're treating us kind of tough over here.
Guys making $10, $15, $20 million a year, and they're complaining about practice. We're talking about practice. Not a game.
You know what I do?
Not 3 3/9.
I'd run them even more. When you do, guys, you got it. And that's why I know you think Detroit's going to fire their coach. But sometimes, guys,
you're talking NFL, the pencil. NFL,
you got the pencil. You got to change a culture. You got to give coaches time to change culture. And especially when you're talking about professional sports, you have to change them, the culture, to get them to buy in, especially when you're a weak team. It's unbelievable sometimes how soft guys can be.
It's, you know what I do like to do?
What's that?
Is to, because when I first got into the NBA, it was like the 89-90 season. And you talk to guys who at that point had been players who are now coaches and executives talking about
that. It's like the Mitch Richmond Kings, right?
I was 89-90 was still the run TMC. So I was backing up Papa doing radio
for
the Warriors. Exactly. That's how long Greg and I have known
him. I didn't know you were backing up Papa on that radio stuff.
Yep, exactly. When they had Steve Albert doing TV.
That's a rough gig, too, because Papa doesn't miss a lot of time.
No, like, but in April, because he ended up going to do the A's. So April ended up being my month. I was doing a bunch of games at that point. It was a lot of fun. So for 3 seasons, I did that. But you would talk to guys who used to play the game, like your Nellies, when they played in the early 70s. And then they would talk about the guys being soft in the late 80s and early 90s. And now those guys are executives in the league from the 80s and 90s. And they're talking about guys today who are soft compared to the guys who were being called soft by the guys from the 70s.
It's incredible.
Every era, every current era seems to get softer and softer as we go.
And you think about 20, 25 years from now when the players won't even actually have to lace them up and play the game.
No.
It'll all just be simulated.
Yes.
Yeah. You won't even have to show up.
Players will have comfort pets, though, if they're asked to practice after two games.
Exactly.
They're going to have blankies on the side, and they're going to have comfort pets.
Don't get me started on comfort pets. I'm about to go guru's gripes on you.
Really?
I think it's a wonderful idea for the people who actually need it.
Don't couch it.
People who throw a sweater on their animal and think that allows you to just parade your pet on your lap in the restaurant, at the counter. If you're not...
On a plane.
If you're not really in need of a comfort animal, slapping a sweater on your shih tzu, and I apologize for such racy dog language, that does not qualify you, in my opinion, as having your dog or your comfort snake or your comfort mongoose or whatever it is. So I think the program itself is wonderful for people who actually need it, but it is abused at grotesque levels.
That deserves a loud round of applause, by the way.
Thank you, Anna.
I'm totally with you.
Give yourself.
Yeah.
No, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop here from Top Rope.
Right. Because Top Rope, you kind of know.
That's not what Top Rope does right there.
This is not.
I like to surprise every now and then.
Yeah.
In that case, you get a
good for the
hearty
mister.
Yeehaw.
Good for the mister is what I say.
Mister, okay. Take these broken wings. Thank you.
There you go.
Learn to fly again, etc.
I think everyone agrees with you, but the minute you make a stance like that, here comes everyone on social media who's going to just start drilling you at how comfort pets save my kid, comfort pets save me from.
It's great.
Great.
But he didn't say that. He said,
I know.
So I know.
It's the people who
people
abuse.
People have ruined the world.
No, pet owners have ruined the world.
And then people who then correspond with their egregious hacks of others who just say, hey, enough with your animals. Now you're the bad guy.
I'm the bad guy if I want to go.
Someone else's animals crapping at the airport. Right.
Or just like staring at me and panting at me while I'm trying to enjoy my my Cobb salad. Hold the ham, hold the chicken. It's like, because you got a nice cute sweater on your dog.
I've seen that happen. Yeah, exactly. That
like they think you're going to feed
them. Excuse me, ma'am. Yeah. Can you have your dog please not beg off my $17 salad?
And then they're giving you the don't pet my dog. Like if you see a dog, you're like, oh, look at a puppy. Don't pet my dog.
Yeah. I usually don't have that problem.
Well, don't bring the dog on the flight. Okay? I'm sorry.
You know, I know a guy who tore up his knee tripping over a comfort animal in a coffee store.
Oh, wow.
It's a true story.
Really?
Yeah. But you can't sue because the dog has...
Why
course,
not? Why
because
can't
that dog
you?
Has the same rights that you and I have to be in that coffee establishment.
That whole random pet thing.
What about the people that actually walk the dog in a stroller?
Each his own. I mean, I've seen...
No, that's pretty weak.
Well,
that's pretty weak.
You know...
That's pretty weak.
I'd rather see that than the person who drives with the dog on their lap. That should be as illegal as texting and driving. Mm-hmm. It's okay if your dog's in the front seat, hanging out the passenger window.
Right.
But when your dog is physically on you and you're driving, that can't be safe.
I'm pretty guilty of that. I'm pretty guilty.
You throw the dog on your lap while you drive?
I don't throw it on my lap, but Snickers likes to come on my lap.
Wait, hold on a minute. Whoa. Snickers?
Yes. This
is great.
Snickers.
Oh, my God.
What?
I've never taken my cat Licorice on a drive.
What?
But my dog, Snickers.
The names by the children. Please tell me your children named your animals.
This is a true story.
Oh, boy.
These were named by my children, but when I retire in 5.5 years and leave here, I'm going to get two like, not comfort dogs, but like pocket dogs, because I like those dogs. Nutmeg and Cinnamon will be their names. Nutmeg and Cinnamon.
I stand by my Peyton Manning.
What?
I think it's great, and I love that you're happy with your animals, but can you maybe drive with them in the back seat? Or is that?
I'd like to,
but Snickers won't be stopped.
No, she jumps up on my lap.
Okay.
You know, I'm a lovable sort.
This is kind of weird. So that's why I've kind of got quiet. Have you ever seen driving? Have you ever seen a brother with the dog sitting on his lap?
You know, I don't normally see color in people,
but please,
will now start to. I don't know if I ever. Yeah, shout out white people. Score one for low.
It's sort of like on the scary movies. You see brothers take off running, and you see the white people say, "Who are you? Who is it? What are you doing? Hi, can I help you? I'm a murderer."
Is that what they say?
It's pretty much. Well, no, you see the end results. I mean,
here we go. Excuse me, but people don't want or like children. We pay for those pets on those planes. It's $100 to pay for the pet on the plane. See? The hate just comes flying.
I don't mind, I mean, pet on the plane, because your dog's not just going to be able to roam the aisle, right? Your dog's in a little box or something. Your dog's in a little bag. And you don't see like a St. Bernard on a plane, do you? No, you see the small little pocket dogs like Cinnamon and Nutmeg. I have no problem with that. You know, it's...
I think it's adorbs.
I'm enjoying this.
Totes adorbs.
I'm learning more. Just keep going. Keep just going.
Do we have enough time to talk about the Giants at the winter meetings?
Man, we could talk about Gerber.
They pick up Gerber, an outfielder.
Great pickup.
And who, by the way,
that's baby food.
Who likes who? Who does Gerber like?
He likes Taylor Swift.
Yes, big fan of T-Swift.
Yes.
So maybe we're going to get a little Swifty love from Gerber?
You would imagine the walk-up music would have to be Taylor Swift.
If it's not, I'm disappointed.
Agreed. She has a good enough catalog to where he could rotate through all of his favorite tunes.
Yes.
Every homestand, maybe a new Taylor Swift song.
Absolutely. A different breakup for
You're
every
welcome,
at-bat.
Larry Bear, for me churning out ideas for you.
Larry's in Vegas right now. He's breaking deals is what
he's listening
doing.
Online on the radio.com app.
By tomorrow when we're here for Joe Lo and Dibs,
I don't know
6
if I'll be back, Jim, after my anti-dog rant.
It could be over. Will we have a Giants move between now and tomorrow when we sit down here for Joe Lo and Dibs at 6 a.m.?
No. No. I mean, they might... They might sign another player. I mean, I got something on my phone yesterday that I think from the great somebody with the Giants organization saying.
Oh, you've got something.
No, you know how they send you those alerts if your phone number is on the thing?
Yeah.
That's all I got. Okay. I got nothing as far as
I thought you got
go.
People giving you insight. I can tell by the back pointed at me that it's time to say goodbye.
You mean the fact that Lowe's packing up early?
Yes.
And you know what that means, right?
Whatever, guys. No,
flag.
That's going to do it. Joe Lo and Dibs back tomorrow morning.
You can't
More to come. Thanks for listening. 95.7 The Game. 95.